This is Dave Evans of HearThis.com and the Prostate Net, speaking today with Dr. Arnon Krongrad. Dr. Krongrad pioneered the use of laparoscopic radical prostatectomy in North America. Laparoscopic radical prostatectomy is a minimally invasive prostate cancer surgery that profoundly reduces bleeding, pain, and recovery time. For more information about Dr. Krongrad and this procedure, please visit http://www.laprp.com. Good morning, Dr. Krongrad.
Morning, Dave.
To start off, please tell us what a laparoscopic radical prostatectomy is and why this is an important option for men who have been diagnosed with prostate cancer.
Prostatectomy is removal of the prostate. Radical means the entire prostate goes, so that means with the capsule and with the attached organs known as seminal vesicles. Radical prostatectomy is the operation we've been doing for prostate cancer for more than 100 years. Laparoscopic means we do the radical prostatectomy with minimally invasive techniques. Specifically, we are departing from the historical open abdominal incision, which we had used for 100 years, relying on modern technologies, fiber optics, computers, monitors, those sorts of things, and doing the radical prostatectomy through what are essentially tiny puncture wounds. The laparoscopic radical prostatectomy is an important option because it, in essence, gives patients the best of both worlds. It gives them, first and foremost, radical prostatectomy, which is the gold standard of prostate cancer treatment. It gives them laparoscopic technologies, which minimize pain and suffering. So the laparoscopic radical prostatectomy is the oldest treatment for prostate cancer done in the most modern ways.
How would you advise a patient on whether surgery is the best option?
There are a number of good options for localized prostate cancer. Radiation and surgery come immediately to mind as two excellent choices for patients with localized prostate cancer. We don't have good randomized comparative trials of the two treatment types, such that for many patients, it isn't immediately clear that one treatment type is superior to the other. What often winds up happening is patients decide based on personal preference whether they're going to have surgery, a radical prostatectomy, or whether they're going to have radiation. The best, I think, doctors can do for patients is to explain the mechanical differences in pursuing those two different treatment options, helping them understand the potential side effects and the risks associated with those two treatment options, and then supporting them in that decision.
How should a patient engage his doctor to ensure that potential follow-up treatment is applied?
Patients first and foremost need to understand that when they're dealing with cancer, there's always some finite possibility of recurrence. Given that the purpose of these treatments is to eliminate the cancer, the principal objective is to ensure the durability of that outcome. In other words, we want to make sure there's no cancer recurrence. So first thing, all patients who have been diagnosed with cancer need to understand that there is some finite risk, be it high or be it very low, of recurrence. With that in mind, any man diagnosed with prostate cancer ought to be talking with his doctor about the long-term follow-up. Among the things that ought to be certainly discussed is the use of PSA, or prostate-specific antigen, as a means of surveying for the possibility of recurrence.
What are the advantages of the laparoscopic versus traditional open prostatectomy? You had talked about pain and suffering and so on. Can you tell us more about that?
I think we can quantify it. There are two primary benefits to laparoscopic approaches to radical prostatectomy. First, there is a marked reduction in bleeding, and secondly, there's a marked reduction in pain. Let's see if we can elaborate just a little bit. With open surgery, depending on who you're talking about, which surgeon you're talking about, and obviously there are going to be variations from surgeon to surgeon, you have what has historically been a relatively bloody operation. This is not to say that our blood loss hasn't declined over the years. It has. The modern open radical prostatectomy is less bloody than it used to be. But still, if you compare that with the average blood loss with laparoscopic radical prostatectomy, in my hands, 50 cc's, we see a dramatic reduction in blood loss. So, for example, whereas with open radical prostatectomy, we routinely transfuse or use the patient's own blood to give back to him, with LRP, it's been 7 years since I've transfused anybody. Now, that primary benefit, the reduction in blood loss, can then be translated into reductions in transfusion rates, which reduces the risks associated with transfusion, such as infections and allergic reactions. When you bleed less, it means you are less volatile in the operating room and therefore less susceptible to complications associated with bleeding, such as drops in blood pressure, which are associated with things like heart attack and stroke. So from that single primary benefit, you get a cascade of secondary and tertiary benefits. you also have less anemia post-op, therefore you are less fatigued and less at risk for things like heart attacks. With pain, we also see a marked difference. With open radical prostatectomy, as you can imagine, when you slice an abdomen open and put your hands inside, you have a patient who's in substantial pain when it's over and almost always reliant on at least some narcotic medications. We now move to a situation where on average patients take 2 Tylenols in the first 24 hours. When you minimize pain and minimize the use of narcotic analgesia, you not only have a patient who's more comfortable, but a patient who's less likely to have side effects such as constipation, dizziness, and those sorts of things that come with narcotics. Now, when you combine those two single primary benefits, less bleeding and less pain, and then add up all the secondary and tertiary benefits, you get a patient who's really much more functional and much more comfortable than he would be if he had an open radical prostatectomy.
As one of the pioneers of the laparoscopic process, what tools do you use when performing this procedure?
The single most important tool any surgeon takes into the operating room is what he knows about the disease and what he knows about his patient. In other words, the surgeon's most important tool is his brain. He has to be thinking hard and he has to be focused on the patient who's come to him for help. I suppose that's not what you meant. I suppose you were asking me about mechanical tools and gadgets and those sorts of things. But I wanted to make the point that as a patient makes his treatment decisions, as he evaluates where he's going to go, there's a certain consumerist bias in the information that he gets, and so a patient can easily become distracted with things that are perhaps secondary to his primary decision. To cut through all that, what I'm trying to say is that what matters to the patient is who is his surgeon, what's his level of experience, and what's his level of focus. Once a patient has identified a surgeon who is extremely experienced, very focused, and attentive to his needs, it is a virtual given that that surgeon will use the single most important technical tools that he needs to deliver the best care for that patient. In other words, the institution is not important, the specific needle driver is not important, but the surgeon is central and critical to that decision. Now, having said that, I use a whole variety of technical gadgets when I do laparoscopic radical prostatectomy. Obviously, we need certain fundamentals like trocars. Those are the straw-like instruments through which we insert all the other tools. We use a whole range of needle drivers and dissectors and those sorts of things. I mean, I hesitate to start to even list all the different gadgets that we use in surgery. But perhaps the most interesting or the most prevalent question these days is, what's your choice of robots? And maybe that's something we ought to be talking about.
I've heard the term robotic laparoscopic prostatectomy. Can you help me understand what this really means? I mean, I've got this vision of Lost in Space. Tell me about the robot.
The vision of Lost in Space is exactly what's not happening in surgery. If you use a simple definition of robots, namely a machine that has certain autonomous functions and can make decisions and take actions on its own, to the best of my knowledge, there are no robots in use in surgery. There are many gadgets made by different companies that are referred to as robots. Among those, there is a Lapman made by a company in Europe. There's the Aesop made by a company in California. There's the Da Vinci. It's also made by a company in California. These are all referred to as robots when, in fact, technically they are not even robots. But they do obviously have all sorts of different uses in the operating room, and some surgeons like one, some surgeons like another. But in essence, we are not talking about actual robots, but rather various electronic devices that serve different kinds of functions.
How should a patient determine the best doctor to perform this procedure?
The most important variable is the surgeon and what his area of interest is. We're talking about an operation, a laparoscopic radical prostatectomy, that is very intricate, potentially risky, and so experience and focus really come to mind. If you don't mind, I'd like to quote something that the American Cancer Society published earlier this year that I think makes the point nicely, and it is as follows, quote, "Some surgeons do LRP remotely and indirectly by use of a robotic interface. For the patient, there is no difference between direct and remote LRP. In other words, no difference between laparoscopic radical prostatectomy done with or without a robotic interface." And then they go on to say, "The choice of direct and indirect LRP reflects the surgeon's preference of tools, much as the use of needle or sewing machine might reflect the preferences of a seamstress. Far more than the choice of instruments, the factor most determining clinical success is the surgeon's experience, commitment, and focus." I agree with those points. Patients faced with a decision about radical prostatectomy ought to be asking whether the surgeon has been doing prostate cancer work for a little bit of time or for a long time, whether he does prostate cancer work along with kidney stone work and urinary tract infections and those sorts of things, and then really try to focus on somebody who's focused on the problem that they have and on the solution that they're looking for. One of the things that can sometimes help, it's not a direct measure, but it's potentially also quite reassuring, is to ask the surgeon to speak with some of his other patients. If the surgeon hesitates or doesn't want to do it, that in and of itself can be a clue that he's perhaps not as confident in his abilities as you might want. Again, it's an interpretation and it's an inference and it's not an absolute measure of quality. But it's one trick that patients can use to help really determine how committed the surgeon is to them and to helping them understand and be comfortable.
So are there candidates for laparoscopic prostatectomy who are better served with or without robotic assistance?
In experienced hands, you can have a really good result with or without the robot. Again, the specific use of gadget is probably best left to the surgeon, and I think regardless of the specific tool that the surgeon uses, if he knows what he's doing, you're going to get a great result. And the fact is, if the surgeon has great instruments but doesn't have experience, you're still not going to get a great result. So who the surgeon in matters the most. There may be cases here and there that are perhaps done better without fancy robots, in other words, with a direct laparoscopic radical prostatectomy, but those are rare. Remember, I've done the LRP with and without the robot. I've done the open surgery and the laparoscopic surgery. There are perhaps a handful of patients who I've seen where I would not use the robot, and those are the ones that come to mind are the especially heavy, the really obese patients. I think having the direct access and the ability to maneuver is probably better without the robot.
What kinds of side effects and follow-up care have emerged from this procedure?
In follow-up, as we said before, it's important to remember that we're dealing with cancer, so at the very least you need to have some sort of surveillance, PSA checks, that sort of thing. There are a number of potential risks associated with all radical prostatectomy. Obviously, cardiovascular complications are a possibility. We're talking about a major operation, and we're talking about general anesthesia. So in all cases, patients really need to be evaluated medically before they go and have anesthesia and surgery. If there's any substantial likelihood of cardiovascular disease, for example, in patients who are smokers or diabetics, stress tests ought to be used and cardiologists should be consulted. When we're talking about laparoscopic surgery, there's always the possibility of conversion, meaning going from laparoscopic to open surgery during the operation. In experienced hands, the likelihood of that is extremely low. I mean, in my hands, the likelihood that I'll start laparoscopically and finish laparoscopically today stands at 99.9%. So conversion is a possibility. Patients ought to know about it, but in the right hands, the risk is very low. You also have to talk about infections, such as urinary tract infections, infertility. Patients need to know that they won't be able to father after they have a radical prostatectomy. If they're not done having children, they ought to be banking sperm. There's the possibility of injury to adjacent organs, such as the rectum, possibility of incontinence, impotence, pain, scarring, and by that I mean bladder neck contractures, which are rare but possible, and as we said at the beginning, the possibility of cancer recurrence. So there's really a laundry list of things you need to be thinking about. Many of these we've itemized on our website at laprp.com, so you can read more about it there. It's a laundry list, and it takes probably more elaboration than we're going to have time for today.
What I just got from what you said is it's the choice, the relationship, and the conversation that you have with your surgeon that, above all else, is important, right? Am I sort of getting it?
Well, yes. First, you want to find somebody who's experienced and really works in the area that you're talking about, but you made an interesting point in that among the elements that are really important to patient welfare is the relationship with the surgeon. Now, that relationship is a different aspect from the technical competence of the surgeon, and I think it's actually very important. I'm glad you said that because invariably surgery is just not a fun experience. I mean, there are all kinds of concerns and inconveniences, and patients have questions, and patients have needs, and they need support, and they need answers. And the quality of the relationship is going to determine the satisfaction, but not only the emotional satisfaction, but perhaps their actual ability to get through the entire experience as smoothly as possible. So, yeah, the technical competence is critical. The relationship is really very important, too.
Before we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to share?
I think we've hit the critical points. I mean, obviously, you want patients to be making an informed decision, so they need to be examining a range of treatment options. They ought to understand the essential characteristics of the disease that they've got. They ought to understand grade, and they ought to understand stage and what the treatment implications are, as well as the prognostic implications of their situation. And then as they go through the treatment options, if they wind up believing that surgery is the best option for them, then I would say that today there's no reason to be having open surgery, and you may as well accept the benefits, and I think they're profound and really meaningful clinical benefits of going the minimally invasive route. Again, less pain and less bleeding. But once you've got to that point, your focus really has to be on finding the right surgeon and finding out who he is, what he's done, what he's focused on. And as for all the rest of it, what gadgets he uses, what tools he uses, you know, that's about as meaningful as asking Lance Armstrong whether he'll ride in the Tour de France for you using a Schwinn or using some other bicycle. You've got the rider. I wouldn't micromanage the tools.
We've been speaking today with Dr. Arnon Krongrad on the topic of laparoscopic prostatectomy. For more information about this procedure, please visit Dr. Krongrad's website. Again, the URL, http://www.laprp.com. On behalf of everyone at the ProstateNet, thank you so much for taking your time to speak with us today. Thanks as well to our listeners for taking their time to learn more about prostate health and the difference that they can make in their own life for the benefit of themselves, their friends and family, and the community to which they belong. This podcast is a copyright production of the ProstateNet and HearThis.com. All rights are reserved.